Greetings, Chicagoland. Thank you for tuning in to the weekly program, Building Community, Strengthening Nations, based on improving lives through public service and volunteerism. Today's presentation is brought to you by the Forum to Achieve Altruism, Compassion, and Tolerance, the FACT organization, with more than a 75-year legacy of promoting peace, harmony, equality, and social justice for all. Building Community, Strengthening Nations features newsmakers and movers and shakers engaged in enlightening discussions on current issues and events that positively impact our diverse communities. The FACT organization invites you to contact us for general information or referral services, volunteer opportunities, and suggestions, questions, or comments regarding programming topics and guests. Please call FACT at 773-424-8002 to reach our 24-hour voicemail and facsimile. Our email address is faactorg@aol.com. Now tell your friends to tune in to FACT every Tuesday evening at 7:30 p.m. We're streaming live over the internet at www.thechicagolighthouse.org. My name is Ruth M. Fairfax Frazier. I am the founder and executive director of the FACT organization, and today I am so pleased to serve as your host. FACT is always excited about this opportunity to share time with you, our most valued listening public, with different weekly topics of interest that positively influence our communities. However, as we always say, this can only be accomplished with your help. The fact is, we all need each other, and by uniting our efforts, we can make a positive difference for everyone. In a nutshell, FACT's combined vision and mission is to help create a better world through educating the public and coalescing with others to eradicate biases and prejudices, as well as hate crime. Chicagoland, we have a very esteemed guest joining us today, Dr. Paula Wolf, director of the Illinois Justice Project, a civic organization with a mission of developing and implementing policy initiatives and programs to reform the criminal justice system by addressing youth trauma and reducing youth and adult violence, crime, and incarceration. Welcome to the program, Dr. Wolf.
Thank you so much. I appreciate the invitation to be here.
Dr. Wolf, we want you to give us kind of an extensive coverage of your background because you've done so much to help people over the years.
Well, that would take a long time. I'll give you the quick overview.
Okay.
I came to Chicago to come to graduate school at the University of Chicago, thinking I was going to grow up to be a professor, and became very engaged in the politics and the policy of the city. So worked for a while for Governor Ogilvie and was able to watch the Constitution of Illinois being written in 1969 and 70, mm-hmm. and then finished my PhD and taught for a while, then became involved in Governor Thompson's administration, and I was his director of policy for 14 years, the whole time that he was governor. Mm-hmm. After that, I did a short stint at the MacArthur Foundation, and then I was president of Governor State University for almost 8 years, and then came to work with Metropolis, what was then Chicago Metropolis 2020, became Chicago Metropolis Strategies, and now am working at the Illinois Justice Project. And along the way, I've had wonderful opportunities to be involved in public service, including recently chairing the Tollway and Chicago City Colleges.
Okay. And, you know, you've also have put in service on other boards. Can you tell us about those?
Sure. I've had a wonderful experience being able to serve on the Joyce Foundation Board, which is a foundation based in Chicago that does work on policy throughout the Midwest on a number of different issues. I'm on the Johnson Foundation Board, which is in Racine, Wisconsin, and they do a lot of work on convening people to talk about policy and other issues. I'm on the University of Chicago board and the Medical Center board at the University of Chicago, the Paul Simon Institute, which actually operates out of Southern Illinois. As I list them off, it sounds like I'm doing a little too much. Metropolitan Planning Council board, and I'm also on the board of a company, John Rogers Aerial Investments.
Well, we just appreciate all the service that you've done. The FACT organization actually promotes volunteerism and exemplary public service, which you certainly have given to the Illinois and Chicagoland area for so many years. And we just like to ask your advice for those who are interested in volunteerism. What can you tell us?
I think the most important thing is really having a passion for being involved in an issue or a set of issues. And it's been my experience that there are literally thousands of organizations and groups that benefit from volunteers. I would say it's important to make sure that the values of the organization that you're volunteering for are consistent with your own personal values. Mm-hmm. And that sometimes can only be known by spending some time with an organization or working in an organization and making sure that that passion really syncs up with the passion of the organization. Mm-hmm. But I guess the most important thing is, at least for me and those that I know, it's just incredibly satisfying to feel as if one is being able to contribute to help improving a community or some lives of people.
Well, we certainly appreciate you. And can you tell us, what are some of your personal interests and inspirations?
Well, I guess personally, it's hard to separate that from my public interests because so much of my time is focused and spent on a lot of the public involvement I have. Mm-hmm. But I do have a wonderful husband, 5 children, mm-hmm. and now a number of grandchildren.
Oh, wow.
So that part of my personal life is extremely satisfying. Mm-hmm. And I continue to be very interested in really trying to understand, I guess, intellectually some of the things that I practice every day. So political theory is still of great interest to me, and really understanding how policy is developed. I have had an opportunity to teach some policy courses, and I always learn a lot by doing that.
Okay. Well, you know, as the position that you hold now with this wonderful organization, we want you to share a little bit more about the mission and vision of the organization and give us kind of an overview of what you do.
Okay. Well, I need to go back a little bit in time. I mm-hmm. started doing this when I was leaving as president of Governor State University, and I knew I wanted to do something in the policy world. And I also knew that I wanted to take on an issue that really needed some examination and probably some change. And I often think about, as I was looking at what was the most messed up policy issue in the state of Illinois, mm-hmm. And very high on that list was the justice system.
Okay.
And in part, I felt responsible for that because I think some of the issues that now are manifest in the justice system were really issues that began back when I was working in government. And I think a lot of people with good intentions made some mistakes about how we thought about justice in this country.
Mm-hmm.
I started, as I mentioned, with Chicago Metropolis 2020, which is a civic organization, the Commercial Club of Chicago, which is the group that actually commissioned the first Burnham Plan back in the beginning of the 20th century, had started this Metropolis group to look at issues, policy issues in the region. And they actually weren't looking at any of the justice issues, but I knew a lot of the people who were working here and wanted to join their organization, and they were gracious enough to have me come here and work on the justice issues, and really started by thinking about the relationship between violence and crime and the justice system. And that was when really nobody wanted to talk about the justice system, and we were sort of committed as a policy matter to sort of lock them up and throw away the key. And a lot has changed in the 15 years. I think we're now at actually a very heartening point in the policy cycle where I think people from both sides of the aisle and lots of different ideological points of view are thinking about how to change the justice system.
Yes.
And in examining it, when I first started, I was just sort of angry at everybody. I said, this is so messed up, and everybody's doing bad things, and we're locking up so many people we shouldn't be locking up, and we need to focus on the really violent people who are destructive of themselves and communities, and that's not who we're putting through the justice system. And then, having studied it for a while and worked in it, it became clear to me that what we had done is created a lot of policies that were internally contradictory. So all of the parts of the justice system, which is very decentralized, by the way, you've got the local, the regional, and the state, and the federal, and then you've got prosecutors and defendants and judges and police and a lot of different players. But all of those players were doing what they were assigned to do, but the overall result of that was a system that was spending a lot of money, was not particularly efficient. In Illinois, for example, now we are locking up about 40-plus thousand people a year. We're letting almost that many people go out of our prisons, and about 50% of them are coming back to prison within 3 years. And if you look at total jurisdiction under the justice system in Illinois, those are people who are on probation, in prisons, jails, on parole. It's about 220,000 people, which if it were a city, would be the second largest city in Illinois. So we have an enormous number of people caught up in this system. We're spending, just at the state level alone, on the Department of Corrections, about $1.3 billion. And
wow,
we're not getting the kind of results I think that most of our taxpayers would want.
Well, what is our recidivism rate? Because you said at about 50% within 3 years. How does that compare to the other states around the nation?
That's true throughout the nation. And this problem that I've described is not unusual to Illinois. There's some states who have actually taken some steps to begin to reform what they're doing.
Okay.
But it's about the same in other jurisdictions and also at the federal government level.
Okay.
But the way we looked at this was, you know, there were sort of three intervention points. The first was it was just as people were starting to do brain scans and studies of young children and discovered that for many children, the exposure to violence and trauma, not even necessarily being a victim, but being in a community where there was a lot of violence and trauma, could actually affect brain development. So the part of the brain that responds to stimulus and is constantly sort of reacting quickly without good judgment is overdeveloped, and the part of the brain that exercises judgment is underdeveloped. So it's like a car with an accelerator and no brake. And so young children who have been traumatized frequently when they're in a situation, for example, with a law enforcement person, will react either fight or flight, and they don't control themselves, and that gets them further into trouble. So trying to link up this idea of brain development and trauma with how we were treating juveniles and punishing them and putting them into the system led us to the idea of trying to divert as many juveniles as we could out of the system. And actually, Illinois has been extremely successful.
Great.
We've gone from a projection of about 2,600 youth who would be in our state prisons by this time down to a real number, which is, I think, today under 600. So two youth prisons have been closed, and there was some legislation passed this spring which will even further reduce the number of inappropriate incarcerations. I just want to underscore there are some youth who need very structured environments. I'm not sure prison is the right place, but do need to have some help for some problems that they have. But I think we need to triage and make sure that inappropriate incarceration is stopped. And then on the adult side, the same thing. And Governor Rauner has recently created a commission, and it was one of his first executive orders, And the charge to that commission is to reduce by 25% the number of people in adult prison over the next 10 years,
okay,
which is a big step toward trying to make sure that we're using our resources mm-hmm. on incarceration in the most intelligent way.
Okay.
That's probably more than you wanted to know.
Oh, no. This is what our audience is very much interested in and why we're so happy that you're involved in what's going on here, you know, because we want to improve the juvenile justice system as well as for the adults. And tell us more about the overcrowding that goes on in the prisons here in Illinois.
There's some dispute about what the actual appropriate number of people is for Illinois prisons, but I think generally it's accepted that probably 37 or 39,000 people is the capacity of the current Illinois adult prisons. And right now we're hovering, I think, around 49,000. So there are reports from the John Howard Association, which is a watchdog prison group, that there are people, you know, in bunk beds, in gymnasiums, in prisons, and overcrowding and very unsanitary, poor conditions.
Mm-hmm.
There's a new director of corrections who was announced, I guess, last Friday, who will be starting, who has quite an excellent record. He comes from Iowa, and he's got his work cut out for him, but I am optimistic that some of these problems with the physical structure and the overcrowding will be helped by his arrival, in addition to, I think, a new emphasis among a lot of different players in the system that we have to really reserve prisons for the people who belong there, and that we should begin diverting people out of prisons into drug treatment or mental health treatment, and trying to figure out how we actually can make the system more effective.
Well, you know, that is a wonderful approach, but then it begs the question, has there been appropriation for those other two?
Well, as you, I'm sure, are aware, there actually hasn't been an appropriation for anything in the state of Illinois except those that were mandated by the courts. I guess they don't even have an appropriation. They're mandated by the courts or the federal money that's passing through, so and to pay for state employees. So many of these programs are currently in limbo, mm-hmm. Awaiting some kind of resolution in Springfield. Mm-hmm. There is one program that we actually helped to develop that, if I may, I'd just like to explain. Is that okay?
Sure.
And that's a program that actually has continued to build support and get more appropriations over the last few years. It was started at the juvenile level, but now is at the adult level, and it's called Redeploy Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
Let me open a parenthesis here. The one thing I learned when I was in state government is you have to have a catchy name for your programs or they don't last. And I can't think of those names, but somebody with us when we were putting this program together came up with Redeploy Illinois, which I think is a great name. So I'll close that parenthesis.
Now, is that
the purpose of Redeploy is to... I'm sorry.
Is that the program that began in 2004 with legislation as a pilot program?
Yes.
Okay.
It is.
Mm-hmm.
I can just give a quick sort of description of it.
Sure.
If you're a judge, for example, in Sangamon County, and Ruth shows up in your court for the fourth or fifth time, and she's been doing things that, if she were an adult, would not be criminal activity, like truancy or missing curfew. You would say to Ruth, look, Ruth, if you show up here one more time, I'm going to send you off to prison. And you're going to learn how to behave. And sure enough, Ruth's going to show up the fifth time, maybe because she has a dysfunctional situation at home, or she's gotten involved in drugs, or has some kind of mental disorder, and is breaking the law. And so you send her off, but the reality is that she's going to come back in all likelihood, and having been in prison, she'll come back and think of herself more as a criminal, but also will have associated with some people that you probably don't want her to have associated with. But the catch in all of this was, if you're the judge, it doesn't cost your county one penny to send Ruth off to prison. So the idea behind redeploy was to say to the counties and the other jurisdictions, you tell us what kinds of services you would need to help keep Ruth in your community. You know her best. You know her family. You tell us how we can get her stabilized and keep her from breaking the law again. And the state will make that money available to you. But the condition of that is you have to reduce by 25% the number of people that you send to the prisons. And if you don't, we're actually going to give you a monetary penalty. We'll fine you.
Oh.
And the early part, well, I guess still, the results of this program have been that rather than reducing by 25%, jurisdictions across the state that have participated in this program have reduced by 50% or more the number of people who have been sent to prison. And that's one of the reasons that Illinois was able to close two of its juvenile prisons.
That's wonderful. Mm-hmm. Okay. And do you see this program expanding to other counties?
I hope so. It's now, I think, in about a third of the counties at the juvenile level and about a quarter of the counties at the adult level.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the counties that send the most people to prison, both juvenile and adults, are participating in the program, and it's been very effective. Over 1,000 adults have been diverted from the system because of redeploy. And it's a special population. It's not people who have not come into the justice system very far. These are people who otherwise would have gone to prison. That's part of it. The judge will say, I'm going to send you to prison, or I'm going to send you to redeploy Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
And we do hope that it continues to grow. One of the reasons that I'm particularly concerned about the stalemate around the budget is that this program has not been appropriated. And for many counties, they have to make a choice about whether they're going to continue the program using existing resources mm-hmm. or wait and hope that the state comes up with dollars, because they don't want to dismantle their programs
sure.
for fear that the people who are doing such good work in the programs will end up having to go someplace else and find other jobs, and then it's very hard to rebuild the infrastructure later. So there's a real, for me, a real immediacy to try to get the budget problem solved.
Now, does this program receive any kind of matching funds, either at the federal or local levels?
No.
Okay.
I think probably de facto at the local level, it does. They aren't direct funds. They're probably indirect.
Mm-hmm.
Many of the people who participate in these programs and the planning are people who work in the justice area. They don't get paid extra money to do this. Or if you're the superintendent of schools and you sit on the local council that decides how to create a plan, you don't get paid extra money for doing this. So the local communities are contributing the time and the effort and the insights of the people who are there to design the programs to help people stay out of prison.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, what I'd like to take a few minutes to do, Dr. Wolf, is kind of give our audience an overview of some of the recent legislation in Springfield, as well as some that is pending that affects this issue of criminal justice. And I know in the recent spring session, the Illinois General Assembly passed some significant reform legislation aimed at right-sizing the criminal justice system and expanding restorative justice opportunities to keep juveniles out of the system. And I just want to review some of the bills approved by the General Assembly, and if you could elaborate on those for us. And one is the DJJ right-sizing, Senate Bill 1560, with Senator Kwame Raoul here in Chicago and Rep. Elaine Dekritz of Northbrook, which would no longer allow juvenile misdemeanors to be sent to state juvenile prisons. Could you elaborate on that for us?
Absolutely. And you've done your homework, so you've outlined that bill. And Senator Raoul and Representative Nekritz really did a wonderful job on this. They worked with Director Candace Jones, who's the director of the Department of Juvenile Justice. So the idea was to make sure that the resources that we put toward the juvenile prisons were actually being spent on people who would benefit from good programming in the system. And over time, there have been a number of studies done that demonstrate that for lots and lots of youth who are caught up in the justice system, the best thing is to just send them out of the justice system. There was actually a big study done, I think it was 45,000 youth in Cook County, that was released about 2 years ago, which demonstrated that for those who had not been pulled into the justice system, maybe arrested, some of them had been charged, but they were just sent home, basically, or sent back to their communities, they were much more likely to finish high school, and they were much less likely to go into the adult system. So the bottom line principle here is, if a child is not a danger to himself or the community, the best thing is to try to figure out how to not get him or her caught up in the justice system. So that's really what the purpose of this bill was. And on the adult side, we don't put misdemeanors, people who commit misdemeanor crimes, into prison. Mm-hmm. And so this was just creating the same thing for the juvenile system. In addition, there were kind of an odd category of young people between the ages of 18 and 21 who were put into the Department of Juvenile Justice because they had had some kind of incarceration in the justice system earlier in their lives, and then they were caught with a new offense or violating what we call aftercare, it's basically parole, and they were sent to the Department of Juvenile Justice, but the department really only programs for youth through the age of 18, up to 18. So they didn't really have any good programming for these youth. So they are, because of this law, no longer going to be involved in the system. And then the other important feature of this law is that it now prohibits youth from being on aftercare or parole for certain crimes any longer than they would have been had they been adults. So before this law was passed, if you had committed a juvenile crime and you were being supervised after you left prison, that would be until you were 21. Mm-hmm. And I know from myself and from my children that it's very hard between the times you're, let's say, 16 and 21 to follow all the rules all the time.
Of course.
And for many of these young people who were basically on parole, there were a lot of rules they had to follow, mm-hmm. and they would break one of those rules and they would end up back in prison. So now, depending on what crime you commit, it determines the length of time that you will be supervised. And I think it makes much more sense for those who have the less serious crimes to be supervised only for 2 years or so, rather than if they were released from prison when they were 15, to be under supervision for 6 years until they're 21. So that was a very important, but I think sort of underreported feature of this bill.
Okay. Well, you know, there's about 10 others that I'd love to go into more detail with you on. So what I'm going to do, Dr. Wolf, is ask you to promise us that you will come back and we can continue this discussion.
You know, I would love to, and I hope by then there will be many other important victories that we can talk about and celebrate, because it feels as if we're actually at a point in time where people are beginning to try to make the justice system more effective, and I'm delighted with that, and I'm really pleased to be able to share that with you and your listeners.
Well, we only have less than a minute or so left. What would you like to really leave with our audience today?
I would like to congratulate them on choosing to listen to your program, because I know you always have interesting and exciting things to share with them. And I just, again, would thank them for the time that they've committed to listening to this, and hope that some of this will encourage them to get involved in being a part of the solution on the justice system or some other issue in the Chicago area that really interests them.
Well, how can we get in touch with the Illinois Justice Project? And could you give us both a website and a telephone number?
You know, our website is iljp.org, I think. And the phone number, the best number to call is 312-332-8157. And you'll get Jenny. And she can direct you to the people here. There are not a lot of us here. Mm-hmm.
But you're doing great work here. And I want to thank you, Dr. Wolf, director of the Illinois Justice Project, for spending time with us here on Chris Radio. We want to ask our audience to always remember that the Forum to Achieve Altruism, Compassion, and Tolerance, the FACT organization, is here to help build communities and strengthen nations through promoting exemplary public service and volunteerism. Please join us next week on this same station for what promises to be an excellent program of lively conversation. Chicagoland, peace and blessings to you and your loved ones, and please contact Dr. Wolf to get involved with the Illinois Justice Project. Bye now.